Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is time for our iTunes reviews.
iTunes reviews.
You guys are on the same period today.
Oh my God, we're so good.
Yeah. You did that. You ended another episode today together. It was magical. It was like, whoa.
It's very sweet.
Sometimes.
You guys.
Sharon, so we had 19 reviews this week.
19.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Adam's favorite age. Yeah.
That joke.
That's how he prefers them.
That joke works for you.
It does. Yeah.
Bro, that was a horrible comeback.
That's your lane.
That's a horrible. That's the equivalent. That's like me going to someone and be like, "Hey, man, you're fat," and be like, "No, you're fat."
Dude,
like,
you're fat.
No.
Better one than that.
That is a good comeback. That's because anybody.
I'm like, I'm like rubber. You're glue. Yeah.
Everything you say is poo. All right, go ahead, Doug.
All right, so we're gonna give out 5 shirts this week, starting with Fit La Vie. K Motto's one.
She just now got a shirt.
Fit La Vie?
She's one of our favorite girls.
That's my girl, man.
They're like everything.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Patrick Bodger.
Mm.
Fit Navy 2012, a Navy pilot.
In the Navy.
And our final one goes to Pumphead, not Kermit.
Pumphead, not Kermit.
Well, fuck you.
So he likes me and Adam.
You don't get shit.
And
So send your name, the one I just read, to iTunes at mindpumpmedia.com, your shipping address, your shirt size, and we'll get that right over
and
to you.
And don't forget, if you want to leave a review, click on the podcast icon on your phone.
You got to search it.
Even if you subscribe.
Even if you're already subscribed to the podcast,
like,
you still got to go to
Mind Pump? I don't know. I'm searching.
Search. Yeah. Type in the search function, Mind Pump, 2 words. Click on the icon when it comes up, and then there's a little tab. Click on it. It says reviews. Leave a review. You could win a free car or a t-shirt, whichever one we have.
A t-shirt, not a car.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
So today we got a chance, we're going to our Q&A, and somebody was asking a question about the deadlifts and why so many IFBB pros don't do them. And this was one of the things that I was so excited about when we created MAPS Black and
MAPS Aesthetic.
Yeah, MAPS Aesthetic. Absolutely, there are deadlifts in there, and there's a reason why there is. And the programming behind that is designed specifically to target lagging body parts. It's exactly how I would get ready for any show. So I took a lot of the concepts from the original MAPS Anabolic, and we melded them together with the same way that you would train to get yourself stage ready by developing any sort of lagging body parts. So that's really the science behind MAPS Aesthetic, and to neglect a movement like that would be silly. So that's probably one of the most number one things I see wrong with programs out there. So
MAPS Aesthetic, one of our more popular programs, has the focus sessions that Adam's talking about. It's phased workouts. It's a very effective program. Lots of our competitors like to use it, and the aesthetically driven customer loves using our MAPS Aesthetic.
The Mankini enthusiasts.
Exactly. You can find that program and others at mindpumpmedia.com. You look good today, Adam.
Thank you.
You got your jeans on.
I know, right?
I have to paint the picture for the listeners.
You posted a picture. How about that?
You can go on my Instagram at mindpumpsal. No, you got your jeans, but then you
kind of pegged them.
But you didn't really peg them, though. You just rolled them up a little bit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Didn't do the full pegging?
Sometimes I do.
Do you really?
Yeah.
And then you got your special shoes, whatever you talk about all the time.
Special shoes.
You know, you say, oh, these are one of the kind. Nobody has these shoes.
I don't say, do that again. How do I say it?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what you did this morning. Yeah. I gave you a compliment because you look good today. Well, yeah. And I'm like, damn, you look good, bro. And he comes in, he's like, yeah, and I got these, I don't know what they're called, my something shoes, one of a kind, nobody else has.
This is the first time I've seen you wear these shoes before. It was the first time I've ever seen you be able to match them.
Well, that's why you don't see me wear them a lot.
Yeah.
They're a special pair of shoes that don't come out because they're rare shoes. But part of the reason why they don't come out that often is there's not a lot of things that go with Green.
What are they? In gold?
Well, I don't wear a lot of green, so it's not an.
I do.
Yeah, you could probably rock the shoes more than I could. I just don't wear a lot of green.
It's like almost like a
Freddy Krueger,
kind of like a candy cane.
It's a Freddy,
but not the white candy cane. You know what I'm talking about, the green and red.
They're Freddy Krueger edition.
Oh shit! It is.
And you see those are splatters of paint, and it looks like blood. Yeah.
But why green though?
That's what
he used to wear, dude.
The shoes
he used to wear green.
No, remember, he wore the green and red shirt.
No, it wasn't green. It was like,
or was it black?
It was black or like?
No, it was green.
Gray.
It was green and red.
It was green.
Yes, it was green and red.
Dude, Nightmare on Elm Street. Let's look that up real quick. Freddy.
Yeah, check it. Check
we
it
gotta look that up.
Maybe I'm
while we do that.
Maybe I have no idea.
So what's the special? I'm looking it up right now. Let's see. It is. It's red and green.
Son of a bitch.
Well, look at that.
Hey, you know what's funny?
You think maybe my whole childhood just went upside down.
I didn't disagree with you, so I wasn't wrong. Yeah. So this is not. It wouldn't have been the first time I was wrong.
Okay,
I was in the clear.
Almost.
So, but what
we
is
caught you twice?
What's
dude.
The name of the shoe that was so special? You said something. You said these are something somethings.
The ASIC shoes are normal, but Kit Casso is a guy who paints.
That's the name.
He paints on Casso. Shoes. Yeah, and I hate shouting him out because I actually had. I was really the reason why I never did shout him out. I bought these shoes over a year ago, and when Mind Pump was first just kind of growing, of course I'm going to leverage the show and say, hey, listen, I'll mention you on the show if you hook a guy up, right? And I said, if you're not into it, that's not your thing, then that's cool. I want a pair of shoes anyways, and I'm not fucking a cheap ass. I'm not going to not buy them. So I bought them. But then what I was really irritated was not only did he not want to hook me up and send me a pair of free shoes, and I would give him love.
What a dick. They don't want to send you free shoes. What kind of an asshole is that?
Shut up, bro. Sorry. Let me finish before you make me look like an asshole.
My bad.
I put that out there as an opportunity for him, and it would be mutually beneficial. I love shoes. He could hook me up with one pair of shoes. I could talk about it, give him some love. And this was before, and his business has been taking off, and some people I'm sure already know who he is that are listening, especially if you're a shoe person.
Is he an artist or something? Is that what he is?
Yeah, well, and he does this to shoes. He's gotten so big now, he does Odell Beckham's. You know who Odell Beckham is?
I have no idea.
Of course you don't. So he's a special wide receiver that plays for the Giants. And he does his cleats, his gloves, and he customizes them. They're fucking super dope. So he does a lot of cool work, and he's an artist who paints on shoes. And so he's got a lot of pairs that I really like. Well, anyways, when I ordered these things, I paid for them, and they're not cheap. Like the shoe already, the ASIC shoe alone is like a $180 shoe. Well, then if you have an artist paint on top of it, it's a few hundred dollars on top of that. So I paid a couple bucks for these fucking shoes, and it took him like literally over a month or a month and a half to get them to me. And I remember like DMing him and like following up, and he's like, oh my God, so sorry. And of course he gave me some like business excuse, but I thought to myself, wait a second. I first asked you to work something out like this. You kind of blew me off. You didn't do it. I still bought the shoes anyways, because that's that I want.
And then you took forever.
And then you took forever. And then you didn't think of a way to like, hey bro, pick a pair of shoes out, half off on me, or I'll do it for free, or some sort of love. Nothing. Just fucking sit my shit.
Damn. So they cost hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
Wow. And you're wearing them?
And you're wearing them in public?
That's the purpose of it.
Well, I mean, I thought maybe you'd save them because they went up in value or something.
Well, I do. They do. And I do hold them, and I keep them. That's why they look nice.
Let me see the bottom.
Look at the bottom.
You stepped in gum.
Yeah.
It ruins the value, dude.
Yes, I take care of them.
Are they yak lined, like yak fur lined on the inside or something like that?
No, not that crazy. They're pretty normal shoes. They're not that crazy. Mm. You can see them on Sal's Instagram. He posted them up there already, so you can see.
I don't know. I think I might have cut that part out. Or did I?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't even look to see. Yeah. Did you?
I think it's full body because we have our cool new shirts on, which don't cost hundreds of dollars, but are equally as amazing and
they're
limited.
Very valuable.
Are the shoes in there, Douglas?
Mm-hmm. And okay. Limited.
Good job.
Our shirts are limited. Mm.
They are. Oh, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. So I want to mention that to people. So I've had quite a few people ask us, like, how come you guys never talk about the shirts on the show except for like that you did right now on the side note? Because if you're probably looking for the shirt Sal's talking about, it's probably already sold out.
Yeah,
we only do limited runs. If you're on the forum,
you get first dibs, man.
They know first. They know so first. We always let the forum know at least a day or two before the general public knows, where we announce it on the website or put it out there. And you get 50% off all of our shirts. So whatever the price is, it's always 50% off, whatever that is, all the time for the forum members. So that's kind of the perk of being in there. And we also want to keep it limited and special for, that's part of the deal why we, when we created the forum, we wanted to always do that. So we're not a t-shirt company. We're not trying to build a t-shirt company. We just know that there is a need, and we'd like to do cool different ideas, and we like to offer it to our private forum first and let them know. So most of the time they get sold out. So if you're somebody who's pissed off that, you know, you never get your size or whatever, because I've gotten some inboxes, is they are limited. We only buy X amount. When we sell out, we sell out. We're not bringing them back type of deal, or at least we have no plans of doing it anytime soon. So that's one of the perks.
You can keep them in the package, never wear them, and they will go up in value.
Yeah, they will.
Maybe.
Like black market. Or, yeah,
if you're really smart, maybe you get on it really quick. You buy up all the most popular sizes, then you turn around and sell them on eBay for twice the price, because they are nice tri-blend shirts. So they're
you could be a dick and do that.
We did get pretty good quality stuff.
Can we make a flannel?
Yeah. For Justin?
Can we?
No, for everybody.
I've been asking Justin this forever.
You have. You
know what I mean? I want to start the trend of the flannel and...
with RVCA shirts or shorts.
Yeah, or just the shorts that, you know, are like gym shorts.
Yeah,
gym shorts with flannel is
definitely... I don't know if anybody else can get away with
that. It is very unique.
It's very unique. Like, you wear it, you look okay. You look good. If Adam wore it, wouldn't look good. If I wore it, wouldn't look good.
But that's why I do it. I don't want to be like
Doug could probably do it, though.
Yeah. Doug could probably.
Yeah, he could probably do it.
Doug can kind of do anything he wants.
He pretty much can. Yeah, I think so. But Justin looks the best in the flannel and the random athletic shorts.
Oh, shit.
Ooh, it did shit.
Is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking quad.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-qua.
Our first question is from Carlos Benitez 760. Can lifts or neat during a strength phase hinder gains?
Excellent. Lists.
Lists are neat?
Like a lisp?
Do you think maybe...
I got a lisp.
Do you think maybe he means more like hit?
That's neat.
No, he's talking about low-intensity, steady-state cardio.
I'm very aware of what he's talking about, but why would you even think that low-intensity or neat would affect something?
I think he's coming from the position of, can too much other activity limit strength gains during a strength phase of training?
Okay.
I mean, anything could, right? Yeah.
It would take a lot, though.
It would take a lot.
The likelihood of you doing it, you would intentionally have to almost try, right? Where would somebody, because we're not talking about like a marathon runner.
Well, let's say let's look at neat. Let's say you're a construction worker and you're shoveling sand.
Okay,
and shit like
okay,
that.
Okay, good example. That's already enough. I get where you're going.
Yeah, okay,
that makes sense.
So can that limit strength? If your body's adapted, I think you're okay. I think, of course, there's two extremes here. There's a myth, and I believe the root of this question is based on the myth of muscle building, where if you do any kind of cardio, it's going to take away from gains. Like, lift weights and then go sit on the couch and rest and build muscle, and then that's all you and eat, and that's all you do if you want to get maximum, strength and size, which is false. That's false. If anything, some form of cardiovascular training will probably benefit your strength gains because you become healthier. I don't see how being unhealthy is going to make you stronger. Right. You know what I'm saying? Of course, we have extreme athletes, like the extreme powerlifters, that just eat tremendous amounts of food, just lift heavy, and they're big, rotund athletes.
Yeah, it goes along with the extreme bulking kind of mentality that goes with that, where people just want they think calories in and out. So versus like me expending calories, it's more worth me just not moving at all and sitting down and then eating a ton to be in a surplus. And so people will look at any form of cardio as like the devil.
I build muscle better when I'm consistent with my cardiovascular activity. Now, I'm not going crazy with it. That's not the root or core, I should say, of my programming. But I noticed that I have better resistance training workouts when I have some type of cardiovascular training involved as well. Number one, because it gives me more endurance, so I'm able to do more reps when I'm lifting weights. Number two, I feel healthier. And I think better health always contributes to better gains. Doesn't matter what your gain, what gains you're after. If you're healthier, it's probably better. But there's an extreme, right? Like if you're doing 2 hours of cardio every single day, will that take away from muscle building? Of course. You're sending a signal to your body that's saying, you know, become very efficient with calories. You're going to be burning lots of calories doing this, you know, monotonous activity. And so then your body tries to adapt by reducing the amount of muscle you can carry because, you know, muscle is a very expensive tissue, right? It burns lots of calories.
Well, it also takes calories that could be partitioned to going to building muscle to being utilized as energy too.
Yeah.
So, and that's where when you brought the analogy up of the, you know, contractor, that makes a lot of sense that way because this reminds me of, you know, the struggle I had, you know, in my early 20s of playing basketball, training clients. I was moving a lot, you know, so I'm doing a lot of lifts, right? Well, basketball would be considered cardio, but the rest is just, you know, would be considered lifts or neat. And I had a really hard time gaining, you know, and building size because I just couldn't quite, I couldn't eat enough calories. So I couldn't eat enough to for what I was burning. So if I could see it hindering strength gains if you're, if this is you, if you're somebody who struggles with putting weight on and like you feel like you eat everything and you already have a hard enough time, well then yeah, adding lifts or adding neat into your routine I could see definitely hindering.
But still you're, what you're mentioning is on the more intensive side, like because that's what's normal to you, right? Like doing athletic activities or doing normal things throughout your day that might be a little more intense than most. Whereas I feel like lifts or neat, like we're focused a little bit more on the recovery element of it and the blood circulation and, you know, getting your body to heal and repair, you know, that's going to do nothing but benefit your strength gains.
You know, when I remember, because I've been lifting weights for a long time, right? I started lifting weights at the age of pretty consistently at 13, 14 years old. And I used to, every summer, I would go help my dad with his work. And he used to own a company where, he was a tile setter. So he'd lay stone and marble and granite, all that stuff. And when I went with him and helped him, I would do all the grunt work, right? So I would do all the, you know, the shoveling of the sand and the cement. I'd mix the cement. I'd carry the cement into the, you know, into the house where he would, you know, float the mud and do all that stuff. So I was doing tons of activity, and I noticed the opposite. I actually built more muscle when I would do that, from handling the shovel and handling the buckets and doing all that stuff. It wasn't so intense that it was killing me, but I was being active versus when I didn't do that, it was like school and weights and that was pretty much it. I wasn't a super, you know, active kid otherwise. I wasn't like you guys playing tons and tons of sports. So I don't know, you know, I know Adam, you're talking about how it made it hard for you to gain weight, but I'm wondering if what kind of weight?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
You know, what kind of weight? And also, if it was hard for you to gain muscle anyway, you know what I mean? Because of the way you trained and you don't really understand nutrition that well because your age.
That's why it's debatable for sure.
You know what I'm saying?
That's why I don't think it's something you really would have to. I think the only person that I would even think that would consider doing that would be that person.
That extreme, extreme activity all day long.
I just can't. Yeah, I'm moving tons already. Like, you know, I'm stepping 15 to 20,000 steps. That's a lot, you know? If you're somebody who's stepping 15, 20,000 steps because you have a job that requires you to move a lot throughout the day and you're already got a fast metabolism and you move and you're doing this and then you have a hard time and you don't have a huge appetite, like, then I could understand that. Other than that, I wouldn't worry about it.
You want to consider, too.
I wouldn't be going out of my, I wouldn't be going out of my way to not move because I'm trying to be stronger.
And you want to be, and you want to consider this, like, the human body has an incredible capacity for workload, way more than most people even come close to realizing. The problem is that we've become such sedentary, lazy, weak animals that we don't realize. We don't know what our capacity for work is. But if you don't believe me, go to some countries where people, since they're children, you know, are working very, very hard, and you'll find people in their 70s who can outwork you on a regular basis, don't get sore, don't feel nothing from it, and it's not a big deal.
Well, do you remember reading this? I don't remember where I read this first, but do you remember seeing stuff like the average female could consume like 4,500 calories in a day without putting on fat, like back in like, you know, we're talking like a few hundred years ago when she had to go out and
so active.
Well, yeah, you were up in the first thing in the morning of, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. on the farm and moving chickens and cows and doing physical labor. And then you had to kill your food and then, you know, and skin it and do all this manual labor just to consume. Like you put in more burning calories of preparing and getting your meal ready than you did actually consuming your meal. Like We're at a different time now.
You just have a the human body, and it takes time, by the way. I'm not saying right now if you're listening, like, oh, great, Sal said I have this huge capacity for work. I'm going to go do all this shit because no, you'll hurt yourself. You'll burn yourself out. Your body's not used to it. It takes a long time. But if you're a construction worker, like the example I used before, and you've been doing it for 15 years every single day or 5 days a week or whatever, and that's been your job forever, and then you go lift weights, you're going to build muscle. Your body's so adapted to that construction work, it isn't bothering you anymore. Now, if you took, you know, if you take me right now, who, you know, I do a podcast for a living and I lift weights and that's pretty much it, and you go have me hammer nails, you know, 8 hours in a day, it's going to burn the fuck out of my arms. My forearms are going to be fried. My biceps are going to be fried. My shoulders will be fried. It'll take me a long time before that doesn't have, you know, potential negative effects on me, you know, in comparison to or how it influences my resistance training. But the human body's got an incredible amount of capacity for work. So if you're one of those people that's like, oh, you know, I work at UPS and I move boxes, you know, for hours a day and I've been doing it for the last 7 years, like, don't worry about that, dude. Your body's pretty adapted. It's going to be okay. Go lift weights and you'll build muscles like anybody else.
That being said, that's also something I think it's important that people realize, that when they do have some of that, they think that they're considered really, really active people, when it's like, dude, you are, because you have a job that does that, but that doesn't compute the same. That doesn't justify you eating this way, because your body is so used to that workload that you're not really burning that much as you think you are. And
you become very efficient.
Yes.
Your body learns how to become very efficient. Like, if you put me in a pool and have me swim, I'm going to burn a lot of fucking calories. I'm not going to go very far, versus somebody who swims every single day and is really, really good with the technique, and they just become very efficient. Their body becomes very efficient.
That's why you got to interrupt it.
You
got to come in and interrupt the process to be able to overcome new stimulus.
Yeah, so I guess the bottom line is, if you're doing a normal amount of knee and activity, or you're doing 30 minutes, you know, of cardio, you know, 4 days a week or something like that, a low intensity, it's not going to hinder your strength gains at all.
Curtism, 1978-2000. Why do most diets fail long term?
Easy, because it's a diet,
right?
Yeah,
because
put a label on it, man.
It's a structured, you know, specific way of eating. I'll use a very. Let's talk about a kind of an extreme example. Let's talk about vegans. Okay, vegans have a pretty strict diet where they only eat foods that are not animal based. And some of them go as far as not even eating honey because it comes from bees. When you do studies on vegans who are following a diet, because it is a diet, right? They have, it's the way that they eat. Vegans that follow their diet for moral reasons have a pretty good track record of consistency. So if they're eating, if they're vegans because they believe
they love animals,
anything that hurts animals, they really it's like part of their who they are. It's almost like a religion to them. Then they stick to it pretty well. Vegans who eat vegan for health have
because
a horrible.
Think it's the better way to eat.
Yeah, they have a horrible track record, and that's all diets. Like, if you follow a diet because it's your belief system, like if you eat, you know, a particular way because you're Hindu or Buddhist or Muslim or whatever, or you're a Seventh Day Adventist, and which is a sect of Christianity that eats a particular way, that's different. But for the average person, when they go on a diet, it's because they're either trying to lose weight, or they're trying to gain weight, or they're trying to, you know, do something specific, and it's not necessarily part of their moral compass.
Well, they're doing.
You're going to fail long term.
Most people that do any diet, and yeah, you did. You use veganism, but you can use any diet. They get on the diet for the wrong reason.
Mm.
When they start the diet, it's their idea is they're already going in with the wrong mentality. It's unfortunate, but it's true. A majority of people. I mean, there's all exceptions to the rule, of course. But for the most part, you know, at least in my experience, you know, the tons of clients we've trained, when they go into a diet, it's like it's this crash course, you know, goal they have. And it's not like rarely ever did I get somebody who says, you know, I'm eating this way because this is how I'm trying to find what's best for my body.
Even if it's health based, typically it's playing catch up because they found out some news that they went and got checked up at the doctor. And, you know, if they found out they're deficient in something and that's contributing to, you know, some autoimmune disease, or, you know, they have something going on internally that they're now paying for. And now this is the ultimate motivation to now all of a sudden be attracted to healthy options.
Even that. Think of all the people that you personally know, okay, who went to the doctor and the doctor said, this artery is, you know, almost all, fully blocked. We have to put a stent in here, or somebody you know who had a heart attack, or somebody you know who's a smoker. And how many of those people actually did the things necessary to make themselves better? It's still not a fucking good percentage at all.
Just in watch that morbidly obese show where all they have to do is, you know, lose a specific amount and they can get a surgery.
Dude, there's one of the reasons why doctors don't talk much about changing your diet and lifestyle. One of the reasons
blows my mind, by the way. I just had a family member that got diagnosed with cancer literally 2 days ago.
Very sorry to hear that.
And the first thing that I asked her when I was talking to her, I said, "What did they tell you to do nutritionally?" And she says they didn't give me any advice.
But do you,
and I think to myself, like, are you fucking? My aunt is a like two glass a night type of wine drinker. And I'm like, dude, we've got to get away from.
Cut it out,
oh man. Yeah, the wine's got to go. We got to get rid of all this processed carbohydrates. Like, I was like, no one's telling you this right now. Like,
you know why though? I'll tell you why. Part of the reason why number one, it's not part of the protocol. But here's number two. I train a lot of doctors, and some of the doctors I trained would make those recommendations, and they tell me, they say, Sal, nobody fucking follows it. Nobody. Like, I'll sit there and look at someone with high blood pressure and say, look, you need to lose weight. And I know they're not going to do it. And so I think part of the reason why they don't tell people to change that is because people would rather fucking die, dude. And it's true. Look around. Look, there's a lot of people out there who get heart attacks and you know, get problems and stuff. And it's not out of the blue. It's not like, oh, I was perfectly healthy, lean, and whatever. That happens too. Coming. But more often than not, there's lots of signs, you know what I mean, that they know. They went to the doctor and they look at their blood work and they got all these signs and diabetes and all these different things. And then something happens. And it's like, why didn't you change, your lifestyle?
Yeah.
And I think here's the thing. When you're looking at your diet, you know, I use the example of the vegans that do it for moral reasons and how they have a good track record. And I think there's something to be learned about that, okay? When you're starting to learn your body and read the signals and you're starting to connect the dots in terms of what foods actually are doing for you other than weight gain and weight loss and how they make you feel, and what ends up happening is you develop a different relationship that becomes kind of a moral code. Now, I'm not saying it needs to become your religion. What I am saying, though, is when you go into it that way, when you go to you know, eat these foods that are quote-unquote bad for you, you'll find that you'll be less motivated to eat them. They're not necessarily that appealing to you anymore. And so you got to look at that. If you want to change the way you eat long term, you have to change the way you view how you eat. Does that make sense?
It's like excessive partying. You know, it's like, am I going to go out every single night, get fucked up, and like have the greatest time ever, like every single day?
Mm.
You know, like that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, some people can pull it off, but
I was like, yeah. You know why? Because you sold it.
Yeah.
Am I going to have a great time every day?
Where the fuck is he going with this analogy right now?
You know? Like, you have nothing left in the cum tank.
You got to make sure you say it like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just be like, "Hey, do you want to have a great time?"
What I was like. This sounds like fun.
Yeah. I was like, "Yeah, I do actually.
I could do this."
No, you guys missed the point. I'm saying it's bad for you. It's excessive. I'm just saying, like, yes, it's great to enjoy, you know, certain things, cakes and whatever the fuck floats your boat. But at the same time, you got to be realistic at. Well, how am I going to feel about this? You know, what is this going to do to my, you know, my work schedule? What's this going to do to my relationships with people if I'm always, you know, partying my ass off?
Dude, let me give you an example. Okay, when I say you got to change the way you view food. Growing up, for most of my life, I hated fish. Hated it. I just didn't like the taste. There was no fish that I would eat. And then as I got older, I learned that tuna in a can had lots of protein, and I would eat tuna. Never liked the taste, but I definitely forced myself to eat it because I had protein. Fast forward to, I don't know, maybe two or maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and I'm really starting to change the way I view the way I eat, and I'm starting to learn really about the benefits of fish, and I'm starting to experiment with it, and I'm starting to notice that when I eat fish, I have less inflammation, and my digestion is good, and I just feel good overall, and I'm changing the way I view the food. My relationship is changing with food. My motivation started changing, and what I started finding is I started enjoying fish. My taste, it's almost like my preference for the taste of the food changed because I had changed the way I looked at it, and that's what I mean. Like,
do you know this is my theory on how people start to like sushi? What you're explaining right now is my theory on what, because like I give the analogy with sushi as an acquired taste. Like,
well, I had sashimi with you, and I've never even had that before,
and it was good, right? Yeah. So I think a lot of people when the first time you, which I mean, if anybody in here remembers the first time that you tried sushi, and you might not have been a fan. I remember the very first time I was like grossed out by it. I was like, I don't know about this. But then time after time of like starting with rolls and trying a little bit, and you start to notice like how you feel. Like I've never had a sushi meal and feel awful afterwards. Like I feel great. Like I never feel lethargic. I never feel like, even if I overdo it a little bit and stuff myself, like within minutes it passes, and it's not like the same feeling I get when I eat like this heavy carb French fried type of like meal. And so I think people indirect part of the sushi crave, or why people love it, or that process, is what you're explaining right now, is you naturally kind of change your relationship with it because you keep trying it, you know, it's healthy for you. Yeah. And you start to realize that like, I do feel good most of the time. Whenever I do eat this, I do notice
it's more pleasant,
and they don't even notice that's happening. But it is when you think about
that's
it.
That's what I mean. When you change the way you view food, then you can start to. It doesn't become a diet anymore, in the sense that it's not something you do for a particular goal. It's just something you do. It's just, this is just the way I eat now. And your adherence to it is, and your consistency goes through the roof. Yeah. I can't tell you how many clients I've had who I've worked with for years who hated vegetables. Couldn't stand vegetables.
Oh, I was.
And after
like
2 years, they fucking
like
love them now.
Yeah, I was.
Were you like
that? Oh, yeah. I hated vegetables. I was definitely the guy who used to take the green supplements and do all those things. But the more I started to notice that, man, when I made a conscious effort to incorporate it into my diet, I noticed how much better I felt. Then that took me to the next level, which was starting to experiment with them and seasoning them differently and preparing them differently.
That's what got me hooked.
And combining them with different foods. When I started to put all that together, now I'll crave it. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's the big joke with me, right? I made that way back when in one of our podcasts, when I told you the guys made fun of me when I was talking to the other bodybuilder guys about salads. Like I like crave and love salads, and it's like, they talk shit to me like it's like foo-foo for me to like a salad. And I'm like, you fucking moron. Like, I couldn't wait for the day that I actually craved a good, huge, nutritious green salad that's loaded.
It makes it a lot easier to eat healthy, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the goal. That's where you want to go. So diets fail because they don't do that. No. Diets tell you what you eat, what you don't eat, lose this much weight. And then, you know, once you hit your goal, you're off the diet. And then what?
Yeah.
Gilbert Lee J., why are there so many IFBB pros that neglect deadlifts?
Hey, I have to say this, though. I've been seeing that change a lot more. I've been seeing some of these guys. And you know what's funny? I see them
because it's harder.
Yeah, it is hard, right?
Yeah.
I hate that, but it's so true.
Yeah, it's a harder exercise.
Well, it's harder, and they've been told that they shouldn't do it. So it's a combination. It makes it easy to
They justify it because some knucklehead out there said it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's hard. Because let's be honest.
It'll make your waist big.
There's some, we're talking about the IFBB level right now. So these are all pros. Most of these guys work out, train fucking hard. I mean, matter of fact, most of them train harder than they need to. You know, so let's not take away that it's not a lack of that. It's literally that it is a hard movement to get good at. And they've been told that it's going to make their back or their waist grow, and so then they stay away from it. It's easy to stay away, but now you start. I feel like
also doesn't give you the pump in one particular area. It's not an isolation movement. It involves lots of body parts. And if today's back day, and I already worked out my legs, well, deadlifts kind of do both. So what day, you know, am I going to put it on back day and do that? And it just doesn't fit that whole
shit. You say pump mentality. The greatest back pump I've ever had in my life is doing a deadlift and then going over to some isolation moves right afterwards. Man, if you chase the pump, and that's why you stay away from deadlifts, fuck. Go do some deadlifts and then go over, do some lat pull down, seated row, or one of your other isolation type of movements, and go do that and see how your back feels after that. Oh,
yeah.
Oh man, you get the most massive pump ever from
that. Well, it's got to be the definitions that have changed over the years as far as like what is being presented with your physique. Like what is the most desirable from the judges, and like this like little like thin waist is so desired for some reason.
Well, I think it's less that, and I think you were kind of on the right track by making the comment about hard, but I don't think hard's the word. Because that sounds like it's because it's too heavy, or they're not willing
to push. Like you just exhaust the rest of the workout, is all I'm saying.
It's a skill.
It is a skill, yeah.
What scared me away from deadlifting for so long is just being flat out embarrassed of doing it. Like, I'm a trainer. I understand the mechanics of it. And I still, when I first started deadlifting, had shit form, you know, and I understand biomechanics. So, and I know the fear that I had going into the gym and why I kind of strayed away from it. So it does, it takes a.
Well, and there was really no place for them for a long time in like your Gold's gyms.
And then you add that, then you add that
platform.
To me, it's a combination of all these things. It's a fear of doing them incorrectly because it's a very skill driven. Deadlifting and squatting is very skill driven.
Yeah.
And to me, a big part of why I stayed away from it for so long was just fear of looking like an idiot. I'm a trainer. People come to me for advice, and I don't want to put myself out there on the floor where everyone, because you know it, you guys all know damn well when you're a trainer and you're in a gym, people stare at you and they watch you work out. They're interested to see what you're doing. And I want to feel confident about a movement that I'm doing if I'm doing it. I mean, I just the other day, but here's also me. I'm the guy who puts himself out there a lot. I'm okay with that. I was fucking doing Turkish get-ups the other day in the middle of Gold's on the floor. Dude. Literally rolled a mat out and just right in the fucking center of the room in prime time at 5 o'clock. Yeah. The funny part, though, was I went right over to a 50-pound kettlebell without letting myself warm up on Turkish get-up. Boy, that was a mistake.
Oh, no.
What a mistake that was. That damn thing damn near came dude, and dropped. Really? Oh, yeah, dude, it was so embarrassing. But I don't give a fuck. I just dropped down to the 20s and started and worked my way up.
You know what's funny about deadlifts is that I would argue that what's driven the new popularity of deadlifts, and we've talked about how CrossFit's done a little bit, but you know who deadlifts more than anybody? Women now. Women who lift weights.
Oh, for the booty.
Women who lift weights are far more consistently deadlifting than men who lift weights.
Oh, I think I agree.
And it's because they've been sold the whole it builds your butt aspect, which it does.
Yeah.
It does work the glutes. So you're seeing more women deadlift almost than men now.
No, you're right. You're 100% right on that.
Isn't that funny?
You see and you're seeing the shift now. And what gym you're in makes a difference, right? If you're in like a Gold's gym, there's definitely becoming now a good even amount of guys and girls that are deadlifting. But you still walk in like a family type gym or a 24-hour fitness type of place, and it's all women deadlifting. You rarely ever see a man deadlifting in a gym like that. If it's primarily your average Jane or Joe going in there, it's women that have started doing it because they have been told that the back of your legs, your butt, that posterior chain area is like this helps develop that, and it's proven too, which is why so many it's caught wind and it keeps going. But you're starting to see men, you're starting to see it creep over, but I think it's the insecurity. Just because I know what I struggle with, I know the benefits of it. I'm a trainer and I still, you know, was not a heavy deadlifter and squatter because a lot of it is the skill set of it. I don't think I was very good at it and I stayed away from it. So a lot of these guys, I bet you, you know, you go to do that, like nothing sucks worse too. If you're an IFBB pro, you look all impressive and then you can't even pull 200 pounds
off.
I think that's a lot of it, dude.
You know, it's not impressive.
Yeah, man. You don't want to,
you want to go hammer strength 300 pounds. You ready to go hammer strength pull.
Exactly. Cause that looks like you have like some weight on there.
It's funny how the trends go though, because, back in the 90s, very few bodybuilders did squats, barbell squats. It was all about the leg press. You guys remember that? It was a big deal in the 90s. Everybody was leg pressing.
Everybody leg pressed. It's why it's still a trend.
And now you're seeing more pros squat. You're finally starting to see, you know, pros start to barbell squat. I think deadlifts are coming around as well. You're going to start seeing more people start to do them. But also consider you're dealing with people with elite muscle building genetics, the kind of genes that are so rare that these people will probably be more muscular than most of us without working out, you know, compared to those of us who do work out. On top of that, they take lots of drugs to look a certain way, so they also get away with it. You know what I'm saying? They don't have to deadlift to kind of look, you know, big and muscular and impressive.
Right.
Whereas I'm telling you right now, the average person, if you're not deadlifting, you're missing out on a lot of muscle. Now they are too. They just so happen to build muscle, you know, being able to do like a straight arm pull down with a cable or whatever. But if you're not deadlifting, you're the average person, you are missing out big time.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
Mr. JBZ, why is losing 1 to 2 pounds per week the magic number? What's wrong with 3+ pounds per week?
Where do you think that originally started?
Well, I think it comes from – there's some truth to it, I think.
I think it comes down to the caloric thing.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, you know, losing, you know, 3 or 4 pounds a week would require for most average people too big of a
deficit
of a caloric deficit. I mean, if you're eating, you know, 900 calories a day to lose 3 pounds a week, that's probably not a position you want to put yourself in. Number one, it's really, really small amount of food. That's hard to do consistently. Number two, you've cut your calories at such a rapid rate that you're really promoting adaptive thermogenesis in the direction you don't want it to go. In other words, your metabolic rate starts to slow down, and you know, to compensate, and then you're going to get stuck with metabolic damage. Your body may lose muscle because it's trying to slow down its metabolism as well, and you don't want to do that because that takes away from, you know, your ability to burn body fat. But if you're super obese, if you're really really obese, if you're, you know, 100 pounds overweight, you could easily lose more than 3 pounds a week.
Well,
that's not a problem.
This is
not hard to do.
This is where I like to use like analogies that we use a lot and build off that analogy so you can see how it applies in so many different ways with the science. Like, so it's like we always talk about your fitness, your health and fitness or weight loss journey is a marathon and not a sprint. You technically could come out on this race, even though let's say it's a 100 miler, you could technically come out and sprint out the gates. You could lose 10 pounds in the first week and you wouldn't die from that or wouldn't be like crazy unhealthy, but it's probably not a smart strategy for if your main goal is 100 miles. Nobody would do that. In fact, keeping a good speed or a good average speed, whatever that percentage is, that person consistently the entire time would be a far better strategy than sprinting your ass off right out the gates.
And
so,
I think they're talking a lot about, you know, the averages with this, as far as like Sal kind of mentioned a bit with like, if you're like obese and like you have a lot of weight to lose, you know, it is initially like you're going to get it's going to be very easy, almost like barely even trying, and you're losing a lot of weight. So, you know, there's definitely a scale for that where you're kind of, you're adapting to a new set and you might lose weight quickly. And then now I've come more adapted to that process, and now I have to kind of interrupt that and, you know, maybe feed myself a bit more in my activity and adjust everything accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, you see that with people who get like gastric bypass and stuff. You know, if you're 100 pounds overweight, you may be consuming 5,000 calories a day to be that overweight, 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day. Well, now you're consuming 1,500 calories a day. That's a pretty big deficit. You're going to lose a decent amount of weight per week. And 1,500 calories for the average sedentary, you know, obese individual is not a massive, massive cut. Now, that's not how I would do it. I don't recommend it that way.
Exactly.
No, that but would be a smart strategy.
It's not a long-term.
It's not a long-term strategy, but you would lose more than, you know, definitely more than 3 pounds a week. I think the number's kind of, it's this general number, but you don't have to necessarily stick to it, you know. One strategy I've used with clients in the past was where I'd have them lose, you know, more weight 1 week, and then I'd have them maintain another week or even gain a little bit 1 week. I like to keep people – I don't like to have people lose weight super consistently in the sense that they're at the same exact deficit every single day. Mm. My belief is that leads to – you know, a little bit of adaptive, you know, where your body starts to adapt.
Well, this goes back to why we talk so much about the, you know, mini bulks and cuts.
None
of us recommend someone to do that. We think that you should be constantly, even if your primary goal is still, I have 100 pounds to lose. Yeah. I still, if I was coaching you through that process, we would have weeks of surplus. Yeah. I would
be worried if you're losing it too fast.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I think that's the, so when we used to use this number as trainers, because we use this number, I definitely know this came out of my mouth more than once in my career. And when I use it, I'm thinking like telling someone that so they get the point across that we don't want you to drop a ton of weight right away, even though your goal is 100. Yeah. And if all of a sudden I gave you a 10 pound weight loss in that first week, in your mind, I don't want you to be excited about that. That's not the goal right now. So I think it's more of giving clients and giving people an idea of like, we really don't want more than that. In fact, 1 to 2 pounds, you know, you could say
that's a lot. Yeah, 2 pounds of fat.
Most of the time.
That's a lot.
Yeah, most clients, I tell them I don't want to see any weight loss. In fact, especially if I'm introducing you to like MAPS, where you've never trained, you've never had someone program designed for you and actually teach you, like, we're going to be building muscle. I know we're going to be building muscle. So I'm not even worried about if I'm losing weight and I'm building muscle. I know I'm having a harder time whether if I was just not concerned about the losing weight and let's build some good muscle and clean up your diet and eat better and build your metabolism. Like, I care more about the metabolism than I care about the weight going down.
You want to make it so that the weight loss comes off. It's days off that you've got this new, you know, the way you eat has changed. Your metabolic rate is faster because that's more conducive towards, you know, remaining lean, especially in a sedentary lifestyle, or the sedentary lifestyle that we live in as modern humans. You want to be able to be more fit in the long term. This is why our programs are as long as they are. I mean, when you follow a MAPS program, it's 12 weeks typically, 12 to 14, 16 weeks. And why the most successful program that we have is the, you know, we call the RGB bundle, which is 9 months of exercise programming. And we've seen some pretty amazing transformations. Was it yesterday, the day before, where people are posting their before and after? Yeah. And there were some people that were posting some that they've done
Who was it that started that?
I don't know.
Was it Blake? I thought I saw someone giving Blake credit for starting way back. He started a way back Wednesday or something, went nuts. Everybody,
amazing. And
it was cool to see everybody.
Yeah, they're amazing.
It's what inspired me to do mine. I posted mine.
Exactly. And they took years. Some of them took years. But there were some people that were saying, oh, this was at the beginning of when I first started doing MAPS. And now I've run MAPS through three cycles. And it's amazing to see the transformation. But you can tell it's a real solid, you know, long-term type transformation, not this quick, you know, transformation where their metabolic rate is damaged and you know they're going to bounce back. And I get lots of messages from people now, you know, in that regard as well, by the way. You know, now that we've done those episodes on changing relationship to food and all that stuff, I've had people message me and saying, man, I did a bikini competition and, you know, I'm 50 pounds overweight now. And it threw me off because I went so hard and so fast to make my competition that I can't, you know, they say get back on the wagon type of deal. So, yeah, when you're losing weight, you know, keep it slow, consistent.
Well,
some weeks where you maintain.
I want to reiterate this because this was something, talking about the transformation, you just reminded me of this, and this was something that I remember talking about on my YouTube video and stressing this, that I don't care if your goal is only 5 to 10 pounds of losing weight or it's 100 pounds. At the very beginning, it really shouldn't be the goal. You really should be trying to hone in this whole nutrition thing and feeding yourself properly. Like
it's fueling your new movement.
Yeah, and think of it like it's like you are a race car and you're wanting to go fucking get after this race. But before you do that, you want to tighten the screws, man. You want to build the right engine. You want to have the right tires for what kind of race you're running. You want to tweak all that stuff first before you really try and get after it. And while you're tweaking, all you're doing is you're building this super strong, fast car, and it's going to run for you. Instead of just jumping right into it and trying to get to this race, and you're like, shit, I didn't spend the time to tighten this down or even figure out what kind of fuel I should be putting in it. Like, figure all that stuff out and get that honed in, because the weight is going to come. Like, trust me, if you are somebody who is sedentary or you weren't training correctly and you're eating poorly and you're not aware of what you were consuming, just you becoming aware, following a good program, like real programming, like shit, trust me, you're going to be changing. Like at this point, you want to be able to feed the body a lot of good nutrient dense foods and get the metabolism working for you.
Excellent message. You can find all those programs at mindpumpmedia.com. Also, don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you'll win a free Mind Pump t-shirt. You can also find us on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal, Adam at Mind Pump Adam, and Justin is at Mind Pump Justin.
At the motherfucking Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.